I'd like to call the ADA board meeting to order. Quinn, would you please do a roll call of the board members?
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paradise.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett. Ms. Brown.
Here.
Ms. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Bruce.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, and we'll continue with the call with staff and public.
All right, as I point to you, please state your name and organization. We'll start here at the table.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Sunny Morrison, Agtech.
Jeff Van Wan, Ada.
Matt Harris, Ada.
Alan Bailey, Tony.
Carson Roger, Ada.
Jim Consent, Ada.
Mark Davis, Ada.
Nick Smodiak, Ada.
Mark Gardner, PFM.
Gene Terrio, Ada.
Leona Hackman, Ada.
Bill Phelan, Ada.
Chris Anderson, Ada.
Jerry Peterson, Ada.
Crin Campanen, Ada. Jennifer Hunter, Ada. Tom Nelson, Ada. Jerry Judea, the Putnam Law. Crin Campanen, Ada. Do we have any public on the phone, please? Yeah. Public on the phone, can you identify yourself?
Good afternoon, Derek Pearson, Trimming.
Any other public on the phone?
Okay. Thank you, Trim. We have an agenda before us. I'll take a motion for approval unless anybody has some additions or deletions.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. Any objections to the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Public comments. So I will remind everybody to make a public comment. Please state your name, affiliation, if any. Please limit to 3 minutes. And I will start with anybody online. Anybody on the telephone wishing to make a public comment?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. This is Eric Pearson, Chairman.
All right. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I serve as the Chief Financial Officer and Board Member of the Alaska Gas Oil Authority. I'm speaking on my own behalf today. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Board Members. And before I begin, I'd like to respectfully request that you establish a firm start time for your ADA board meetings. When you have a long executive session, as you just did today, with an intermediate end time, the public has no way of knowing when your meeting, your ADA board meeting, will begin. And your executive assistants have tried to be very accommodating and helpful, which I appreciate. But it's surely up to the board to fix this and give the public a firm start time. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to discuss the IEP with you. I have enough respect for you all individually to have a candid discussion with you today. I think it's time for a strategic realignment with ADA getting out of direct involvement with the IEP. We also need a market evaluation to determine exactly what the cost of delivered energy needs to be for the project to be viable. And it is essential we recognize changed circumstances. I've been paying attention to this project for many years, as some of you know. It has been involved with the IEP for about 5 years. And what do we have to show for it? Fairbanks has no gas, tens of millions have been spent, maybe wasted. We have people directly involved with the project that do not have the requisite experience in energy. And we have an objective of delivered cost of gas that is not consistent with getting adequate conversion. And a greater concern, this is in the category of changed circumstances, we have an air pollution problem in Fairbanks North Pole that is making people sick and killing people. Pollution is caused by people burning dirty but affordable fuel sources such as wood and coal. The particulates created are trapped in the valley by atmospheric conditions. And the only way to fix this problem, according to the map, is to get 3,000 to 5,000 wood burners off of wood onto a fuel source that has no particulate pollution, such as electricity or propane, ground source heat pumps, or natural gas. $15 natural gas at the meter does not fix the problem. The meter price is not what people pay. They pay the burner tip price, which is the meter price, plus the amortized cost of conversion, which is going to be considerable for many households. So I ask the board, if I can buy fuel oil for around $14 to $15 per million BTUs, why would I go to the headache of converting to pay more, somewhere around $21 to $22? The problem is even worse for wood burners, who pay around $12 per million BTUs if their firewood is delivered, And for those that come to with themselves, they consider the wind to be free. Do you honestly believe that those people are going to convert to natural gas so they can pay substantially more each month to stay warm? Years ago, we all recall that oil was around $4 per gallon. The IEP target price goal was $15 at the meter. But when fuel oil dropped to less than $2, the IEP goal remained the same. Worse, the IEP is not addressing the reality of what people are paying for wood and how that directly impairs the air quality for makes the North Pole and harms people. I can digress for just a minute and say that in China, roughly 1 million lives are lost each year due to the air quality. That's 3,000 people per day. If we extrapolate this to Fairbanks with 100,000 people breathing air that on many days in the winter rivals the protective pollution of Chinese cities, you have to expect increased morbidity and mortality. The markets have changed and will change again, but ADA is remaining rigid and inflexible and not acknowledging this change or adapting to it. So I'll summarize, Mr. Chairman, by saying that many with IGU are resolutely dissatisfied with ADA right now, as are many local elected officials. And the public is growing increasingly disenfranchised. We need a course correction. We would be happy to work with any one of you to lay out some of the ideas that we need to implement for course correction, but I think it's imperative we get this project back on track. Happy to take any questions. Thank you very much.
Gary?
Thank you, Mark, for testifying. I'd be more than happy if you send me your suggestions. I'll look forward to seeing them.
Will do, Gary. Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Okay, all right. Anybody else online wishing to make a public comment? Okay, online? Anybody in the boardroom? I don't see anybody. I'll now close public comments. Item number six is September 22nd prior minutes. Board members had a chance to review the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for the September 22nd board meeting.
Have a second?
Second.
Hey, anybody have any corrections, deletions, additions that they see? Hearing none, objections of about 3 minutes? Minutes have been adopted. Under new business, we have resolution L16-10 Spur Development LLC. John?
I have two changes from a memorandum. The bottom of page one, the large balloon payment amount should read $3,634,346. There's an extra three. And then on page two, under the collateral and volume line, instead of Creekside retail building, it should read Fresenius Renal Care Building.
What is it?
Fresenius, F-R-E-S-E-N-I-U-S. Renal, R-E-N-A-L, Care, C-A-R-E, building, the dialysis building.
So it's not the Creekside retail building, but we're spending money on
it. Yeah, it's the, yeah, Fresenius Renal Care building.
Okay.
And that is on the first page under the use of proceeds, to read correctly as the refinance Fresenius Renal Care building.
Okay.
So loan resolution number L16-10 regards the purchase by the authority of participation in a loan to Spur Development LLC. The loan will refinance the 19,951 square foot medical office building located at 3950 Laurel Street in Anchorage. The dollar amount of aid participation is $3,600,000. At this time, I ask Chris Anderson to present.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon. No longer evening. Well, John's given a good overview. I'll just continue with the fact that, as you can see, there are several guarantor entities on this credit. Without walking through all of them, essentially, we've got Gerald Meester and Mark Pfeffer. Personally guaranteeing this debt as well as several other trusts. The purpose is to refinance this medical office building, and the existing loan in place has an interest rate of 6.35, 25-year AM, but it does have a maturity of September 1st of 17, which is pushing the need for a refinance of the existing debt. They'll be paying approximately $2,622 less per month, but that balloon is looming in next year, so they would like to refinance. The borrowing entity is managed by its members, Mr. Fisher and Mr. Neeser. They're both well-known in the state of Alaska. The collateral itself will take a leasehold deed of trust, recorded first lien against the property, and as John indicated, this is a Fresenius Freedom Care building. It was appraised at $7,450,000, and that provides a 54% loan-to-value, somewhat less than our maximum, and it gives me debt service coverage of 1.58 to 1, our minimum being 1.25. ADA will require a UCC filing on the FF&E, which is the furniture, fixtures, and equipment, an assignment of the ground lease, and an assignment of the lease with Alaska Regional Care. And the loan is also subject to what we refer to as an SNDA, which is a subordination, non-disturbance, and employment agreement, which is acceptable to the authority. We do have related debt to Mr. Fetcher and Mr. Neeser. We have three related loans with a combined balance of $8,274,440 and one outstanding commitment of $6,297,500, which is Ada's portion. All of the loans that have been booked have been paying as agreed and are current. The one loan that is committed and unfunded should be funded within the next 30 days or so. There are no known environmental issues.
Chris, what does that total up to, counting this one, the total exposure?
Yeah, you've got approximately $11,900,000, almost a little under $12,000,000.
Counting this. Mm-hmm. We have in this type of credit for borrowers. Do we have a limit on how much the organization?
Just $25 million.
Oh.
We do it, yeah, by umbrella overall.
All right.
Exposure.
Okay.
The strengths of this credit are the fact that the building is 100% leased to a national tenant. The property has a strong debt service coverage, as I indicated, of 1.58. The tenants, oh, hi. Recent renovations approximately were $1 million. And our loan to value of 54%, we have very strong guarantors in Mr. Neeser and Mr. Fetcher. What could potentially be seen as a single purpose building in this medical office facility, we thought was mitigated by good rental opportunities in the new med district. Taking our portfolio diversification as of June 30, ADA had 2.69% of its total statewide portfolio in the healthcare industry. With this credit, that would increase to 3.73, and within just the Anchorage region, we're at 3.28%, and that would increase to 5.20%. And the staff does recommend the approval of this credit. So with that, I would entertain questions.
Questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman.
Good.
Chris, could you lead me back to where you said something was less than our usual? I'm just trying to track you.
Yes. Loan to value, our maximum is 75%.
Where are you in this?
Well, I'm just speaking generally.
Yes.
Oh, but on page 2, under collateral and value, I said that this loan provides a 54%, which is... And it's more beneficial from a risk perspective. Do you see that collateral and value, second paragraph? Oh, you need to look at the memorandum. You're on the, yeah, there you go.
So the 54% loan to value is what, just describe that position against our guideline for me.
Okay, so the guideline is 75% loan to value as a maximum. And they are not obtaining a maximum loan on this relative to the bank. So they're refinancing their existing debt, you know, plus the cost. So they're at 54%, which from a risk perspective is more beneficial.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Chris, as a follow-up, you said the $25 million, is that individually or related, any related debt?
We count it as any related debt, any debt that they guarantee.
Okay, so if they're part of one thing for $1 million and there's another thing that brings up the 25, they're out of business with that. Okay. Take a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move loan resolution number 16-10.
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? Ken, would you call the board, please?
Mr. Wilson.
Aye.
Next, Mr. Paradise.
No.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Mr. Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Carried.
Mr. Chairman, I would just direct the board's attention to the bottom of page one in the confidential document that the applicant has made a specific request of us. So if we would read that, I'm going to pass my paperwork down to Elaine and ask it all to go back to Chris from the board, please.
Thank you. I
appreciate that. Our next item on the new business is resolution 1611 of Laplutna Fifth Avenue LLC. Sean?
I have one change for this memorandum under term. Instead of FMBA, the lender should read as Northland. So for loan resolution number L16-11, regards purchase by authority of a participation loan to a Clitna Fifth Avenue Properties LLC. The loan will refinance the 25,935 square foot FBI Annex office building located at 100 East Fifth Street in Anchorage. The dollar amount of the participation is $2,340,000. This time I'll ask Chris Anderson to present.
Thank you. The guarantors on this credit are Equipment Inc. and Equipment Development Services, LLC. The economic development aspect of this transaction is that the borrower will benefit by lowering the annual debt service by approximately $62,900, utilizing future debt service and extending the repayment terms. And they are also funding tenant improvements, which in this particular case will support three construction jobs. Management of Eklutna is managed by a six-member board. Its chairman and vice president is Michael Curry, who's been with the company since 1999, and Curtis McQueen is the CEO and has been with the company since 2007. The collateral involved, we would take a first lien position on the FBI Annex building downtown. We would take an assignment of the rents and an SEC filing on the fixtures. The value of the property under current appraisal is $2,700,000. They are obtaining a loan to value of 70% with a debt service coverage of 1.64 to 1. We also have related debt with Eklutna. We have two outstanding loans with a combined balance of $2,954,966. They are current and they pay as agreed. Again, no financial, no environmental issues with this property that are known. And the strengths that we saw in the credit are the debt service coverage of 1.64. The primary source of repayment is from a seasoned GSA lease. The collateral is attached to and is a vital part of the existing FBI regional headquarters downtown. And they have owned and managed the collateral since 2000. In trying to be balanced and looking at any potential weaknesses, the rental payments on this over the term are fixed. But if your debt is also fixed, which this is intended to be, the borrowing entity's cash flow is mitigated by stabilizing interest costs. Under the portfolio debt, you're looking at anything.
I'm not listening carefully.
Your portfolio diversification, again, is of June 30, is 21.4% in the statewide portfolio, which would increase to 21.9% with this credit. And participated loans just within the Anchorage region are 34.2%, and that would increase to 35.1%. We do recommend this credit for approval. It is subject to the GSA lease being subordinated to the lender's deed of trust. And the lender to certify that loan funds were used to refinance existing debts, tenant improvements, and the cost. And I would be open to any questions.
Questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, I would move L16-11.
Second.
Thank you. The resolution is before us. Any further comments? I'll call for the question, Jim.
Mr. Wilson.
Aye.
Mr. Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And before Chris, you leave, I've got some.
Just
got a little bit of a question for you on refinances. If you have a moment.
Oh yeah, thank you. You're
passing it.
Yes.
So we've noticed that on the pending applications, it looks like about 90% of the applications are refinance for loans and refinancing. So do we have a policy or do we have a lack of a better term would be a amount of our portfolio that we assign to refinance versus new construction? Is there anything that either prohibits or limits or do we have anything that ties into our revolving fund as a percentage on the refinance loans?
We do not have a policy per se, but we certainly pay attention to the diversification of the mix. Now, having said that, we did not always track the finances. And we did, over the years, have a computer conversion as well. So we started tracking refinances in 2010. So there is a fair amount of the portfolio yet that, is not in our system of being tracked. So we went back recently for 4 years because there was a question at the last board and concern about refinances. And so in the last 4 years, even though we could have gone back six, I think the request was three, so we went back four. And looked at refis and, our breakout of the deals that were in the system. So we went from fiscal year 13 to fiscal year 17, year to date, and just refis. And we're looking at dollars. And it was 18.54% in refinance. So it has gravitated up somewhat, because it started out you know, 14%, 10%. In the last 2 years, it's like 22, 25. So, you know, the trend is increasing. But still, I don't think of a worrisome level at this point.
How do you handle, with internal aid, you can say it publicly, I mean, how do you handle the additional cost of doing business with the cost of money and the rate of return for refinances? Is your cost of doing business refinancing versus, I mean, is the same as new construction?
Yes, I would say it's the same because, you know, you're still underwriting the credit, and the interest rate, at least at this point in time, is the same. Whether you're turning out construction or doing a buy-sell transaction or doing a refinance. It's not risk-based that way.
But the one thing a refi doesn't do is add full-time jobs in the community. Is that pretty much an accurate statement?
Okay. So I thought you were talking about.
Well, that's one of the.
I thought you were talking about
also.
ADA, and is it more work to do this internally with additional people? It doesn't take additional people internally to do it. But is your question?
I'm talking about on a refinance versus a construction, new
right.
construction, a new facility, adding new jobs in the community versus a refinance, which typically the jobs are already there. Is that an accurate statement?
I don't know that you can make an apples and apples comparison that way, because if you're to say turning out under construction as an example, say, you know, on an office building, you're turning out new construction, but the businesses moving into that building are existing businesses that aren't necessarily adding people either. I don't know that you can say that across the board.
Well, I would say that would be accurate if the vacancy rate is going up. If the vacancy rate isn't going up, then I would say that new construction would add new jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But, you know, when you refi, when you refinance, you're refinancing the debt, but if you wanted to look at, you know, the businesses that are incorporated into that structure, you know, there may be additional people within a refinance situation. So within the businesses that are housed by the structure that you're refinancing. Does that make sense?
Any questions on the subject from the board?
It's worthy of a discussion.
Well, I think my underlying thought about this is that there's, you know, because it's a growing part of the portfolio,
mm-hmm.
and your activities, that there should be maybe a discussion at the policy level about what is healthy to our total portfolio and to our revolving funds. If there should be something, you know, it may be there's no issues, no, there's exposures or whatnot, but I think the discussion should take place at some point in time that you know, with any trend,
mm-hmm.
you obviously want to address it and identify and make sure there's no underlying liabilities that you may or may not be aware of.
Sure.
So I would throw that out to both you and John as a future discussion for the you know, as the senior management talks about it and brings it back to the board.
Yes, I agree. I think there are cycles in a market, and I think that we are in a cycle now, and it'll change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when new construction becomes more economic, you know, we'll be changing. But we do try to track the portfolio in various ways.
Well, I want to make it clear that I'm not trying to diminish the idea of doing refinancing. I want to understand a little bit more the total percentage portfolio and making sure that at the end of the day, in 1 year, that someone comes in with a new construction and we say, you know, we've exhausted our funds and it's all been refinancing, that would be a sad day.
Yeah, okay. Understood.
Gary?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would support the idea that time specific, two meetings, three meetings from now, we have a discussion and a decision on refinancing. And the decision could be a hard and fast limit, or the decision could be we don't do anything. So So it's wide open, but there's no question, as Chris has said, that over the last couple of years, this has come at us. There's no signs at all, for all the right reasons, why it should diminish, so we should get our arms around it. And we have time to get our arms around it. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Item number C is the Interior Energy Project update. And quarterly report to the legislature. I assume that's Gene. Welcome, Gene.
Item 7C, update on the Interior Energy Project. Included in your packet is an excerpt from the quarterly report to the Alaska State Legislature, dated October 11, 2016. The full report's available online at www.interiorenergyproject.org. And turn it over to Mr. Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since the last board meeting, the report was made to the legislature, and you can see that the date was on the 11th. What I'd like to do today is just quickly go over the different components of the project, as we have done in the past, and then be available to answer questions that you might have. We continue to move forward on all of the different components of the supply chain to supply a greater volume of natural gas to Interior. Unfortunately, as we've expressed in the past, things are advancing more slowly than we hoped. But we still believe we are making good progress. On gas supply, we are still working with potential suppliers for gas that will allow us to achieve the IEP goals. And we have a pending term sheet out with a potential supplier. We are waiting to see if we can close that deal, but it would be a quantity of gas and at a price that would allow us to meet the goals of the project. And just a couple of things that to mention there. We are looking for a gas supplier that will work with us as we grow this demand in Interior Alaska. We start off with just under 1 BCF of gas, and we're looking to, again, partner with a supplier that understands that, understands with where the competing price of fuel oil is right now. We're uncertain on how quickly we will grow demand, and we want somebody to work with us on that, but be able to supply that Interior market as we develop that market. On the LNG plant,
so Gene, just to kind of put it in simplified terms, our goal is to get a supplier to supply the existing base volume we need, but also have reserve to supply as demand grows without the commitment of paying for it, or guaranteeing it. Because that's really the $64 question. We want to, you know, how the conversions go and how fast and whatnot. So I would imagine that's a fairly big hurdle with a gas supplier.
That is, Mr. Chairman. It's like you just dealt with, or you quite often deal with physical buildings. It would be almost like we're asking somebody to build a space, but we're not sure how quickly we will lease that space. We are asking somebody to have a reserve of gas at a price that works for the project, but we are unsure of how quickly we will be able to lock the gas in under take-or-pay obligations. And for the initial customer base, if they got saddled with a volume of gas that is greater than our current need, that would drive the price up and, you know, be very detrimental to the project. So those are a couple of things, dynamics that we're dealing with. But what we are promising a customer or a gas supplier is that as we grow that customer demand, which we believe due to uncertainty of fuel oil prices, air quality issues, that we will be able to do, that they will then be the one that can supply that for a longer period of time and put themselves into a good position to supply it for it well into the future. On the LNG plant, we continue to evaluate ways to drive out capital costs in that link and also operational costs. You've got a resolution on the agenda today that deals with securing the documentation that Salix has produced to date pre-feed documents that we would like to have access to prepare to put together a House Bill 105 plan for the board to consider sometime, hopefully in the near future. As we have talked about in the past, we have been successful in driving down the cost of delivery with the testing last year of the larger volume trailer. That worked out so well, of course, that we secured that test trailer, and FNG has put in orders for three more trailers to be delivered in the next calendar year. There were quite a few headlines that were generated on the Alaska Railroad being the first railroad in North America to transport LNG via the rail. I touched base with Alaska Railroad personnel this morning. They have not crunched numbers from that trial, which is wrapped up. It was all done basically in the month of October prior to today. And they did report that they had five personnel members from the Federal Railroad Administration that was up to evaluate what the Alaska Railroad was doing, how they incorporated input from local emergency service providers along the rail corridor, and they felt like the Federal Railroad Administration personnel went away very satisfied with the program that the Alaska Railroad had put together. On storage, we have reached agreement with IGU that the proposed large volume storage in South Fairbanks is an economic way to move forward. That, of course, access to that storage entails ultimately that we combine the two utilities in the interior so that they would both be fed out of that. Building that storage would allow us to reposition some of the existing smaller storage that's on that site out to North Pole so that we would ultimately be feeding the combined system from two different points and initially be able to feed the pipes that were installed in North Pole before the two utilities are physically linked together via pipe. On utility consolidation, we've had a number of very productive meetings with IGU recently. We're very pleased with the negotiators on their side of the table and their sort of can-do attitude that they brought to those negotiations. At this point, we do anticipate having a deal, if not fully papered, for your consideration before the end of the calendar year, just shy of that. We believe that the progress that has been made recently is very promising. And just to reiterate that with the existing base customers in the Fairbanks area, we really need to unify the two utilities so that as we start to supply customers out in the North Pole area, they're able to piggyback on that large demand. It would be very difficult to start with a very small customer base out in North Pole and control that cost. But by combining the two utilities, we're able to start to develop that broader system and at an affordable cost for the customer. And so I can't highlight enough that the productive conversations that we've had with IGU recently on that potential consolidation. On distribution, this year we did not increase the distribution capability any more than was done in the previous construction year. Under House Bill 105, you, the ADA board, has to approve an entire IEP plan before we get access to any more of the financial tools that were provided by the legislature. There seems to be a little bit of a misunderstanding of that in the communities. I will take some of the responsibility for not working as closely perhaps with some of the local elected officials to remind them of restrictions that the legislature put on our access to the financial tools. And so when they wonder why we're not moving forward with putting a pipe in the streets this year, I have to remind them that we don't have access to those funds until you, the ADA board, sees a whole House Bill 105 plan in a way to make sure that we've got the gas molecules of plants to liquefy them and ability to transport them to actually feed a larger pipe distribution system. And so at this point, we are working with IGU on ultimate utilization of the financial tools and how we can then move forward to build out that distribution system to be able to achieve that one IEP goal as many people as possible, and also as quickly as possible. A component of distribution is the ability to help both businesses and residential customers convert to the fuel. You heard under public comment that there is a concern in the local area of the conversion costs, and particularly with residential customers. We believe that we are working on tools, putting tools in place, working with the local governments on tools that will be able to help customers with their conversion, help them to get over that initial hurdle of investment on the customer side of the meter, changing out their boiler or changing out the gun on an existing boiler, so that they can spread those costs and not have a high upfront capital cost that would prevent them from considering converting to natural gas. I would like to report that Mayor Castle of Fairbanks Bristol Borough is very bullish on utilizing different conversion tools, on-bill financing, PACE financing, to offer those to local customers to help them convert. He has worked with his department heads, or instructed his department heads, that he very much wants to move forward with implementing these tools once they're available, and has instructed them to really view this with a can-do attitude, and identify problems and start to identify solutions so that the local government can work very closely with us to help customers convert to the resource when we get it available.
Mr. Chairman, Gary, or Fred?
Mr. Chairman, Gene, could you just briefly walk us back through the PACE legislation that we intend to reintroduce, I believe, in the coming session? There was also work being done to access RUST grant funding, I believe.
Yes.
And where I'm driving at is in the public comment period, his concern was the amortized cost of conversion, but one of the ways we're seeking to limit that amortized cost of conversion is a lowered interest rate.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's a couple of things that PACE would allow us to offer to a business customer, potential business customer. It would be potential access to low-cost capital with a low interest rate and a longer payback period. PACE is a mechanism that is growing in acceptance and use in the lower 48 that offers the customer those two things, access to low-cost capital, and you stretch out that payment period. And just like your mortgage payment, if you have a 15-year mortgage versus a 30, if you have a 30, that means your mortgage payment every month is going to be that much lower. And so we hope to have that into place and be able to offer that to commercial customers. PACE would be available only for commercial customers, and it's a tool that the local government can opt to turn on if they see benefit. Once the local government turns it on, then it's a tool that an individual business can apply to use if that individual business sees benefit. If it all works out as we hope, that individual business then would be able to actually be cash positive by accessing a lower cost, higher efficient heating apparatus, actually lower their yearly heating costs so that they can pay back their loan but still have savings, or at the very least break even. And with on-bill financing, we believe that the utility itself can offer those same attributes to a residential customer and perhaps be able to access RUS, Rural Utility Services funding that comes is available at very low interest rates.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, that covers all the different components of the quarterly update. There was, a reference to dissatisfaction or angst among some of the elected officials. Mr. Joma Stewart from IGU and I both presented to the Borough Assembly on October 6th. That was a few days before the quarterly report was available. I'm not suggesting that the quarterly report would have answered all of their questions, but I think it did does provide an update and indicates that we are still making progress. Is it slower than we had hoped? Absolutely it is. Do we think we still are on track to achieve the goals of the IEP? We believe we are. And one last thing, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make mention of is we are in the process of responding to a request for information from the Department of Defense to potentially supply Fort Wainwright with natural gas. It's not actually a solicitation for proposals to supply. It's just a request for information. And since the base itself actually straddles the line between F&G service territory and IGUs, and we ultimately hope to take a big step forward and actually combine the utilities sometime here soon, we're going to reply to this within the next week jointly with IGU supplying us input on this response.
Okay. Gene, Gary?
Two things. Gene, just a quick burst, please, about TOC and what they're doing.
TOC entered into a contract to take a small interruptible supply of LNG out of the existing plant so they could test some equipment to use the resource to spin electricity at the plant. They have been, it's my understanding that they've been successful. I know that it causes a little bit of concern in the Fairbanks, North Scarborough Belt. Well, wait a minute, are those gas molecules ones that could be made available in Fairbanks to serve a larger customer base? But I think you have to remember that availability of the gas molecule is only one component of serving a customer. In Interior Alaska, you also have to assure that customer that you can serve them in the dead of winter when demand is high. So you have to have a storage capability that goes along with the gas molecule to be able to sign up a new customer within the Fairbanks First Borough. This supply to TOC, again, is a relatively small amount of gas, and it is on an interruptible base. So the existing customer base in Interior Alaska Fairbanks would take precedence over this. But we are pleased that we have another potential customer that fits within the Interior. And remember, the Interior Energy Project was supposed to be targeted on ultimately serving a customer base beyond the Fairbanks North Scarborough. And this is a potential customer serving semi-rural customers on the highway system that's testing equipment and has, to my understanding, come up with good results.
And that's a good report. And I understand, too, or we understand that Glenn Allen is going to school on TOC, and they're looking at the same setup. So that's a really good indication of how this grows once we have access to gas. The other thing is I woke this morning to come down to a very nice editorial in the Fairbanks Daily Newswire, and the title is A Still Necessary Energy Solution Despite Doubts, Goals, and Interior Gas Project Worthwhile. And I would just, with your indulgence, read one sentence at the conclusion. Giving up on the project because of negotiating difficulty and current low heating fuel prices would be extremely short-sighted move, akin to not dealing with Alaska's revenue issues if oil prices rebound. So I thought that was very timely. I stopped at the store at the airport to bring a paper down to show you that it was real. And I bought some gum. The gum is here. The paper is still on the counter. In the interest of full disclosure, Terry was nice enough
to do that.
Terry was nice enough to print it out. So there it is. We're most appreciative of that, and I think it encapsulates, by and large, exactly how the people of Interior feel. Hey, thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, just for a point of reference, I got the first of my winter fuel delivered within the last week or so. It was $2.22. So at $15 gas to the customer, that's equivalent to $2. So we're beating it by just a hair, if in fact we come in right at $15. But if I wanted to, I could drive down to the bulk plant, I could fill up a couple 55-gallon drums, and I could beat that $2.22 price. I'm not going to do that, and I don't think many people would. And so I have heard from a number of potential customers, residential and business, in Interior that feel like our $15 target is still realistic, and it would still be very attractive to them.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Any further questions, Gene? Thank you, Gene. All right, next on our new business is Resolution G15-02, authorizing expenditures from the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Development Sets Fund to evaluate alternatives to North Slope LNG concession agreement.
For discussion, move approval.
I'm sorry?
For discussion, I move approval of G1502C.
Second?
Second.
So item 70, resolution number G15-02C, is a request to amend the original resolution and provide the budget for continued evaluation of alternative means to supply energy to Interior Alaska as discussed in this IEP update. The request is to increase the authorization by a total of $550,000. One increase of $275,000 from the SETS fund authorization, and an increase of $275,000 from the Economic Development Account authorization. Just for background, in June of 2015, the board authorized an increase from $500,000 to $1 million from the original SETS fund authorization in resolution number G15-02A. And in January 2016, the board authorized an increase from the original Economic Development Account authorization from $400,000 to $700,000 in resolution number G15-02B, and Gene Terrio and Nick Monash are available to answer questions.
Are there any questions for the board?
Where does these two appropriations, where do they show up on this summary chart? Is it under project management?
I'm semi-prepared. Thanks, sir. Okay, so Gary, your question was where would these show up on this chart? So the way the resolution was read on, it identified two sources of funds, SETS and the Economic Development Fund. Over the course of the handful of amendments we've had to the original resolution, we've also added the capital appropriation as a source of funds. We have to work with the finance department, but I expect that would be the source of funds for this incremental financing. So I bring that up to answer your question in terms of where it will show up. It will show up in that left-hand column, the one with the heading 57.5 million capital appropriation. And where it would be spent is down near IEP phase two. As each cost is incurred, either through staff time or through consultant, each hour, each bill we get from the consultants would be coded to one of those line items, either commodity, LNG, plant, trucking, or throughout.
And so the $1.275 million goes where on that chart? Where does it show up?
$1.275 million. It would be...
Another line item?
It would be another line item. So the 1.275, so that's the one in reference in Section 2, that is allowed to be spent out of either SETS or the capital appropriation. And the way the original funding came out of SETS, it was ADA, regular SETS program funds, not IEP-specific SETS. So it was not accounted for on this particular sheet. If it wasn't project funding, it was ADA funding itself, out of its own non-project funds to get started. And that we've since moved to capital appropriation funding, so that will show up in this left-hand column.
So there'll be a new line item under project management that says $1.275 million?
No, there will not. It won't show up on this until the funds are actually spent. This is just an authorization. So
So as soon as you spend the first dollar, shows up at the project management line?
It'll show up in any one of those lines. So say that first dollar is an hour of my time.
I will
code that to whatever I'm working on during that hour.
I see. Okay.
If I'm trying to find gas, it'll be gas supply. If I'm talking to Jomo, it'll be distribution.
This is authorization, not...
This is just authorization. Okay. We're not going to spend it.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions on the resolution?
Mr. Chairman, we already have a motion.
It's on the table. All right, hearing none, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradise.
Yeah. Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Aye.
Mr. Day?
Yes.
Mr. Prudis?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. The next on the agenda is Resolution G1612, approving an agreement with Salix for use of the preliminary front-end engineering and design materials.
Mr. Chairman, move G16-12.
Second.
Thank you.
Item 70, also related to the Interior Energy Project, Resolution number G16-12, regards the approval of the selection of Salix as a preferred respondent to the IEP LNG RFP and authorizes ADA to execute a pre-feed materials agreement with Salix, including extending up to $250,000 from the IEP appropriation for this purpose. I'd ask G. Perry and Mitch Monet to rejoin us at the table to address questions as needed.
Welcome back. Any questions from the board? Questions? None? Pretty straightforward. Friend?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Perry?
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Yes.
Mr. Prudis?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Yes. And the last resolution is G16-11, and this is authorizing the filing of applications with the Federal Transit Administration, the United States Department of Transportation for Federal Transportation Assistance. Is that correct? Let's get the motion on table.
Second,
John.
Item 7F, resolution number G16-11, regards authorizing ADA to file applications with the FTA of the USDOT for Federal Transportation Assistance under federal law. The resolution will allow ADA to accept funds from the FTA to complete additional upgrades to the Ketchikan shipyard. This time I ask Jim Hemsath and Maurice Stender to present.
Welcome, Jim and Laura.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of this resolution of the memorandum is, I would categorize it as one of convenience. There have been additional funds, unused funds from other projects from FTA and DOT that through discussions with Vigor and various representatives of the government have been made available to the shipyard for continuing upgrades work. What this resolution does is authorize ADA to be able to accept those federal funds. Sorry, it was supposed to take
50 bucks.
Supposed to be time to take that. But look, there is some behind, so I'm just going to start through the table now. It was on silent, too. That was really the important announcement. So the purpose of these funds are to make some relatively small improvements at the shipyard, including continued work on electrical substation, relocation of that substation, and I've lost it, Lori. The substation and
some additional equipment.
That's right, some additional equipment they would be able to purchase for pre-production.
Okay. So, questions about this resolution? Pretty straightforward. Seeing no questions, Crane, would you call the board?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday?
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Prude?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, board.
Thank you. All right, now we can have some fun. Back in the hole. Next is executive session, and so you got to ad lib it, man.
Mr. Chairman,
I move
we enter into executive session to discuss confidential matters related to the Interior Energy Project, Blue Crest 2017 legislative proposals, Mach 1 and AO 281.
For a second. Second. Objections? We're in what room, John?
Aspen room.
Aspen room again. Seats are still warm.